Adam here from Day One. Just a quick message from one of our sponsors. Standard Ledger is your trusted partner for end-to-end financial support. They provide core accounting services plus expert financial guidance when you're ready to scale. Whether you need help with bookkeeping, payroll, R&D, or even fractional CFO services, their team supports founders across Australia to manage finances, raise capital, and grow their businesses. Visit dayone.fm/standard today to book your free chat. Let me tell you about our partner, Teamified. If you need to build a top-notch team quickly, Teamified is your go-to solution. They not only provide fractional CTOs, they can also do contractors and even remote team members tailored exactly to your needs. And whether you're looking for expertise in the Philippines, India, or Sri Lanka, Teamified has you covered. What's amazing is that Teamified uses a blend of AI and human expertise to cut hiring times by 50%. Their platform handles everything from automated onboarding to day-to-day management and even performance tracking. You can also handle rewards and recognition, buy equipment and order training all through their platform. Simplify your hiring process and get the best talent fast with Teamified. Check them out now and transform your team. Go to dayone.fm/teamified. That's dayone.fm/TEAMIFIED and get started today. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, founder of the Day One Network, which is bringing the history of the Australian startup ecosystem to you. I believe in founders. It's why I do everything I do at Day One and our media company, W2D1 Media. And that's why the Day One Network exists, to create helpful content for founders. We've got some great shows in development, but a large part of what we do couldn't be done without support from our partners and sponsors. And I couldn't be happier than to be working with NTP, who get community better than any other technology recruitment company out there. A Newcastle company like mine, NTP are invested in seeing the growth of the local tech community in Newcastle, Sydney, and more broadly, Australia. So thank you, NTP, for helping us bring helpful content to founders and the startup community in Australia. Back to the interview. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, founder of the Day One Network, which is bringing the history of the Australian startup ecosystem to you. I believe in founders. It's why I do everything I do at Day One and our media company, W2D1 Media. And that's why the Day One Network exists, to create helpful content for founders. We've got some great shows in development, but a large part of what we do couldn't be done without support from our partners and sponsors. And I couldn't be happier than to be working with NTP, who get community better than any other technology recruitment company out there. A Newcastle company like mine, NTP are invested in seeing the growth of the local tech community in Newcastle, Sydney, and more broadly, Australia. So thank you, NTP, for helping us bring helpful content to founders and the startup community in Australia. Back to the interview. Hi, I'm Adam Spencer, and welcome to Day One, the podcast that spotlights Australian startups, founders, and the organizations that empower Australian entrepreneurship. We go back to the beginning to tell the story of Australia's most inspiring founders and how they built their companies. You're listening to a special interview series as part of a documentary W2D1 is producing about the history of the Australian startup ecosystem. This episode was conducted by guest host Will Cho.
Hi everyone, and welcome back to the Australian Startup Series interviews. Our guest today is Brad Parsons. So good to have you on, Brad.
Hey Will, thanks for having me here.
So to start us off, could you introduce yourself for the audience?
Sure. My name's Brad Parsons. I'm the CEO and founder of Movis. We're a technology group based out of Brisbane.
Could you tell us a bit about what you do at Movis and, yeah, how did it start?
Sure. Started the business back in 2015, which is we're now 7 years old, which is pretty exciting. What we do is we provide a service called Fit Machine. Fit Machine monitors machine health continuously. Our customer base is industrial, and we're currently operating in about 16 countries around the world.
Brad, would you say that you've always been an entrepreneur? Take us back even to your university days.
I wasn't sure as an entrepreneur, but I certainly didn't fit the mold. My bosses would always, you know, be a bit nervous on their feet. I was never happy with the status quo. And that's probably in the history of my career, was I was always looking for a better way to do it, and always sort of challenged the conventional thinking. And I think that hasn't stopped. I have now just got a better mechanism to take that and run with it.
Yeah, definitely. It sounds like the stereotypical startup journey. Didn't fit the mold, was unhappy with the status quo, decided to go out there and do something about it when you saw an opportunity.
Yeah.
So with Movis, would you classify that as a social enterprise?
When you look at us from the outside, you'd say no. Anyone that is in this business, and we've had a couple of new team members join this week, and I typically spend time with them, they soon realize that under the surface we are. Maybe I'll give you a quick insight into why that is. Currently, across the globe, there's about 2.3 billion electric motors, and they use roughly half, so about 43 to 46% of the world's energy. But unfortunately, only less than 3% of those are actively monitored for health. So there's enormous energy footprint out there that is consuming way more than it should. And that's where our focus is.
Yeah, just in essence, improving efficiency using less energy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
What was it like back in 2015 when you launched your business, Movis?
Fair to say, I came out of sort of 25 years of corporate, gave up my very well paid consulting career. The startup ecosystem, certainly in Australia, was in its infancy, shall we say. There certainly wasn't support. And wasn't the breadth and depth of capability that there is today, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Did you join any sort of accelerators or those sort of like startup infrastructure support structures?
Yeah, I did actually. I joined iLab, which is part of UQ. There were very few in Brisbane. There's probably three or four, to be honest. Being in Brisbane, not being, I was in Sydney and Melbourne. At the time, it was very immature. Wasn't too many investors, not too many startups to sort of hold up and benchmark against. There were a few, sort of safety culture, Airtasker, safety culture is a Queensland-based business, based out of Townsville. But there wasn't too many to look to. So it was a real learning experience, fair to say.
Yeah, absolutely. How has the ecosystem grown over the last 7 years from your perspective? Has it been a good surprise or?
I think certainly there's been a lot of attention, and obviously we just talked about investors. So more recently you see the likes of super funds investing. I think that's a sign of maturity.
Yeah.
I think there's still a long way to go. I mean, I've visited other countries. I've been to Israel. I've been to San Fran. So I've seen where it can go. Certainly there's been a lot of focus on not trying to be pessimistic, but on startup theater. So there's a lot of here's the business model canvas and we're going to teach you that. I think the biggest weakness we have here in Australia is the next step beyond that. Once you've got a business up and running, the support really falls off pretty quick.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned when you went to other ecosystems like in Israel that it's sort of a mold of where Australia can be. And I'm curious on your perspective on why is it that we've lagged behind?
I think this sort of episode's really focused on day one, right? So day one is really what the ecosystem's focused on. Day two, Amazon, Jeff Bezos calls about day one, largely they've kept that mentality and thinking. I think for us, we need to look at what do you need once you've got that business up and running? What skills, what introductions, what network? How do you raise capital? How do you, price? How do you, grow a business in terms of people and capability? There's sort of all of those things. And I'm fortunate that, I had 25 years in corporate, so running large global teams. But there isn't that support within the ecosystem to enable entrepreneurs to do that, and the fall off rate is pretty high as a result. Obviously it's difficult as it is, but it's difficult without that ecosystem support rallying around you.
Yeah, so in essence it's just the basic ingredients of what an ecosystem should have that's still somewhat lacking. It works for you because you had 25 years of corporate experience and you were able to leverage that, but for people who don't have that experience, it's still quite difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about Israel. Israel, if you've been there or you understand the society, is, you know, everyone goes through military service. Everyone goes through that. It's mandatory. And through that, they have this quite strong network that results. You know, they've gone through some pretty strenuous, life-changing experiences in that time. So they all bond really well and the network's really strong. And, you know, they've taken that into the startup thinking and hate to use the phrase, but they've almost militarized, you know, that journey from idea through to exit. And there's a very strong, you know, process and that network is really strong. We've kind of got to the business model canvas and we've kind of stopped. That path to exit or that path to raising capital, listing, it's just non-existent as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I liked what you mentioned about how there's quite a lot of startup theater going on. And it's just every other day we kind of hear headline news that Startup X has raised $5 million or $20 million or so on. And we kind of celebrate that as opposed to actual revenue, actual earnings and so on.
Yeah, I was actually on a VC call with a US, a San Fran-based VC this morning. There's some celebration when those raises going through, but you don't hear about the successes and the growth and the, you know, getting to cash flow positive. You know, it's all about the raise. It's not necessarily about the outcome or the impact that those businesses are having.
Yeah. Do you think overall we're still on the right trajectory?
I think there's early signs of that. There's certainly been some great success stories. But generally, there's businesses that are out there building global. I mean, you're in Australia, you have to be global. Same as Israel. Mm. You have to be born global. You know, we're now operating our technology in 16 countries. You know, having businesses that have the support around them that can, you know, get to that point and that understand the pains of, you know, global growth and global presence, I think we've still got a lot of work to do, unfortunately.
Yeah. Switching gears a little bit into that tangent, what could we still be, what do we do better than other ecosystems?
I think due to our size, what I'm sort of seeing more is, certainly more recently, is more impact. So the ecosystem and the startups that are popping out are more impact focused. They're not necessarily about raising a bunch of capital and, you know, getting a nice exit. What I'm seeing the themes coming through the startups is there's themes around sustainability. There's themes around, you know, new types of food. There's themes around, you know, making a difference in, you know, the lives of people. And I think that's pretty exciting. Having impact as a result of what you're doing really drives a differentiating. And I'm certainly seeing that more here than I am overseas.
Yeah. I'd love to get your opinion on this idea of impact, because there is a prevailing attitude that impact and returns is mutually exclusive. Do you think that's the case in startups?
Definitely not. You know, I was just looking through, working with one of our customers this morning, who's a large gold miner. You can see there's a lot of VC capital, and there's a lot of capital in general that is trending towards you know, those businesses, not just startups, you know, large multinationals that are sustainability focused, that those that are looking at their energy profiles, that are looking at their energy mix, and, you know, looking at their future. And that's where the smart money's all headed. Mm. And that's just not in large multinationals. That's at the startup level. You'll see more and more cash will be heading towards that. And, you know, we're looking at, in our next raise, we're certainly looking at VCs that adopt that and support that.
Yeah. What do you think was the catalyst for that? What changed prevailing attitudes?
Over the last couple of years, we've obviously had COVID, and COVID's driven some very interesting behavior. And there was already behaviors globally where the focus has been less about globalization and more about localization. Mm. You know, you're looking at the society you live in. You're looking at, you know, the person down the road. We've all had to be in lockdown for the last couple of years. And, you know, if you're in Melbourne, you know, I really feel for you guys. You've been in Melbourne longer than any other country on the planet. But in doing so, what you're doing is looking at your local impact, looking at, you know, where do you source your goods from? Supply chains obviously being under a lot of stress, semiconductors through to fertilizer. There's a whole range of that. And I think that localization, that focus around localization, that focus around, you know, where do my bananas come from?
Hmm.
I think that's going to continue and amplify. We've seen with Ukraine recently that there's a lot of supply chains disrupted, and even Scott Morrison came out recently and said, you know, these are the seven things that we need to focus on. And fertilizers, as I just mentioned, and semiconductors, no surprise, they're on the list. Businesses and people globally are looking at, you know, where does their product come from, and how can they secure that, and how can they make sure it's as sustainable as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have any unpopular opinions about our ecosystem? So something you believe is true, but others aren't on the same page?
Yeah, I guess at the risk of being a bit controversial, I think everyone is of the belief that, you know, most of the startups that we breed are globally focused. I don't think they are.
Hmm.
I see a lot of businesses that are really trying to make a market out of their local city or even Australia. There's just not the market size. We're 2% of the world economy. Unless you're thinking global from literally from day one, then what you're building only has, you know, a very small market size. And we look after machines, and you think every factory and every plant in Australia has plenty of machines, and we could make a sizable business. But the reality is that's not the case. You need to be looking overseas immediately.
So, Brad, what we're trying to do with this podcast is to document as historically and accurately as possible our ecosystem. And we're aiming to reach all corners of the ecosystem, from policymakers, founders, investors, entrepreneurs, and so on. Is there anything that's on your mind that you think about that they need to hear?
It's quite clear that the growth in this country is not coming from the big multinationals. The growth is coming from, you know, startups like ours, scale-ups. That's where the future of the economy is. And unless you're putting the investment behind it, unless you're putting support mechanisms behind it, then the future of the country's growth is at risk.
Yeah.
You know, that sounds like a big statement, but it's true. When you go back through, you look at the figures on where the growth of employment is coming, it's typically from businesses of this nature.
Yeah. I'd like to dig in a little bit to when you said support mechanisms, is it just funding, or what sort of support?
Yeah, it's much more than that. Driving an international intellectual property agenda or strategy, you know, how do you think about that? How do you think about trademarks? How do you think about patents? How do you think about, you know, branding, you know, naming? You might name your brand XYZ, but it might be offensive in another country.
Hmm.
And, you know, I think there's car manufacturers that have been on the wrong side of that. So, thinking about all of the aspects around that, we've just did a sizable amount of work around our pricing and rethinking our pricing and strategy, and, you know, finding local expertise around how to price, you know, how to evolve from a pay per month to a pay per use to a pay per value, having the talent and the capability here that can support businesses like ours that are going through that evolution. We need to go overseas. You know, we need to be on late night calls for Europe, or we need to be on early calls for the US, because there's just not that sort of breadth of talent support here.
Mm. And it's a recurring theme that I often get with a lot of founders that I've interviewed, that oftentimes they resort to going overseas to, say, establish a headquarters or to get funding, or in your case, to seek that talent and expertise. And it is quite a shame that we can't provide that to our entrepreneurs here in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll, you know, we've had multiple offers. One of the VCs in our last round said, we expect you to stand up an office in 8 to 12 weeks in the US. And that's the condition of the term, is you will, you know, gradually move your presence to the US and you'll be California bound. That's a harsh reality and a pressure that just keeps coming. I get approaches from US VCs or European VCs every week, and there's that inherent pressure. Some are more globally focused, where the group I was talking to this morning had 6 or 7 offices around the world. But certainly US VCs, they want a presence there, and they want the business to be close by.
Yeah.
That pressure is always there, and the funding is enormous out of those ecosystems like Silicon Valley.
Has the, rate of adoption for your startup, has it been easier to establish in Australia or those other 16 countries?
I wish it was the reverse. Australia has this sort of mentality of, we're quite easygoing. The reverse is actually quite true in business, is that they're actually quite risk averse.
Mm.
The US businesses are more technology centered. They will look to experiment, learn, and adopt technology actually much faster than we do. I guess I have the premise, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere. Because it is obviously a small market with risk averse, corporates or industrials, which we're obviously focused on. If you can build a marketplace here, then the US is much easier. So the flip side of that is, why would you create a market here? Why wouldn't you just get up and move?
Yeah. Why are we risk averse?
Good question. I wish I could put my finger on it. Maybe it's a product of the size. Maybe it's a product of the sophistication of the leadership. Having worked in corporates, I come from, I can sort of speak from firsthand. I guess the need to innovate, the need to evolve businesses, it just doesn't seem to be here. I mean, we're one of the richest countries in the world. I saw a statistic that by median wealth, we are the richest in the world, I think by 2020. When you've got that level of comfort, you're not under pressure. Israel has, unfortunately, quite a tough culture. They need to innovate. They need to adopt. They need to go global because, everyone's looking under their car to see what's under there. They're in a pretty constrained and difficult environment in that part of the world. We're on an island paradise in the middle of the South Pacific. Life's pretty good. Why change that? And I think that's probably part of the driver.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just because we've had such a great lifestyle by median wealth, the richest country in the world, we've never felt the need to innovate and stepping out of our comfort zone, essentially.
Yeah, you can't keep digging bigger and deeper holes in the ground. That's not a way to innovate.
If a brand new entrepreneur or founder came to you, given all your experience, your wins and mistakes, what would you tell them to increase their chances of success?
I'd never stop learning. I probably spend an hour every morning. This is my time where I go for a walk, I get some exercise, see some greenery. And then it's podcasts. It's listening to those that have succeeded, those that have failed. And I think if you accept the status quo, then that's where your business will be. If you're constantly challenging, learning, curious, growth will come.
Yeah. What are some of the sources that you listen to?
There's a guy called Ray Reich, the Metrics That Measure Up podcast, US-based. There's a group called NFX, and really focused on network effects. So predominantly some of these innovative VCs that really talk around the challenges of scaling. Once you get beyond the sort of business model canvas, as I said, you need to start to learn and understand that there's many aspects of running a business that is global. And yeah, constantly learning would be the biggest learning that I have is never accept and always challenge the status quo.
Yeah, that's amazing. Brad, what's next for you and Movis?
For us, we're really getting our house in order for our next round of global growth. For us, it's about building out the team and, finding a great investor or investors, probably towards the end of the year, early next year. But the world's just come out of the shadow of COVID. Hopefully that we can put that behind us. And for us, it's about, ramping up the growth as the world comes back online.
Yeah. Brad, it's been absolutely brilliant having you on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks for the opportunity and thank you for your time. Hopefully we can evolve the ecosystem to where it should be.
Absolutely. Brad, if the audience wanted to connect and learn more with you, where could they go?
LinkedIn. I spend a lot of time on there, so reach out to me. I'm more than happy to to connect and share however I can help you.
I hope you enjoyed that interview. More interviews are on the way. Follow the podcast wherever you're listening right now. Stay tuned for more interviews with many, many more amazing people from the Australian startup ecosystem. Thanks for listening and see you next time.